Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Are you ready?
Hey guys, come on, bring it in.
I've scrolled through my contacts, sent out the invites, and our guests are about to arrive. Welcome back to the podcast dedicated to the most precious human pastime. I'm Gregory Porter, and this is The Hang. This podcast is beautifully simple. I sit down with friends, idols, and inspirations of mine to discover what makes them tick. Whether it's music, family, real life experiences, it's the moments that move us, that make their way into our art. For this episode, I've shined the silver.
My dad was a man of very few words. However, that one move there has just led to all this.
Ironed the curtains and rolled out the red carpet for pop royalty.
It was my dream to be on that show, and so whatever it took to get there, I'd entertain.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's Gary Barlow.
You know, this thing you're dreaming of, even when you get to it, you're dreaming of the thing beyond it. It's like you never actually settle anywhere.
So here, sit back, grab a drink, and let's do this. Really, really a pleasure to be hanging on the hang with my man, Gary Barlow. We are going to be talking about music, the foundations of where we come from, how we came to music, what it means to us, and, you know, just what we do here on the hang. Let's just talk about music and life and whatever comes up, quite frankly. Tell me about the roots and the foundation of how music came in.
Well,
I
was lucky enough to have a very musical household. We had a record player from, well, as far as my memory goes back, we had a record player, and we lived very close. You love this, actually, Gregory. We lived, my mum was from Liverpool, and when she was a teenager, she used to go and watch Lonnie Donegan play at the Cavern. And there was a group on before him called the Beatles. So she was always going to gigs. So our house was full of music. It was the Beatles, Elton John, Billy Joel, ABBA, lots of skiffle music from this. That was the local sound of the North at that point. And then as time went on, you know, it got more Donna Summer, Michael Jackson, then the whole New Romantics happened when I was buying records, Duran Duran, Spandau Ballet, So lots of music. So before I started making music, I was just completely involved in it, enjoying it, listening to it. It was just always in our house.
But in terms of your opening your mouth and finding your voice, was it singing
along
to the records?
I started as a keyboard player. I got my first job as an organist in a little bar in North Wales when I was 11. I used to play every Friday and Saturday night. And I did that for a few years and got better and better. And then when I was 14, I landed a really big job that was part of a trio backing. So it was more piano and organ, with a bass player and a drummer the other side. And we'd play behind all the comedians and the singers and the hypnotists and the jugglers in like a cabaret club. And that was every Friday, Saturday, Sunday afternoon and Sunday night. And I was 14 when that was going on. So I had loads of experience on stage playing behind people. And then when I was kind of 16 and my voice had broke and I'd started developing myself as a singer, I got tired of sitting behind people and wanted to be at the front of the stage.
Well, having your first gig at 11, that would make you a child prodigy, I think. Yeah. What do you think?
Yeah, I was. You know, I was the only. There was really no musical connection to anyone who played piano or an instrument, even in our family. I just picked it up by ear, and as my repertoire grew, I realized I need to read music because it's I don't want to cut any corners. So I really learned, and this is the strange thing about my development is that by the time I was 18, 19, I was such a good keyboard player, really good. But when I joined the group when I was 19, of course you get a record deal and you go off traveling around the world. My playing really. It went away. I've never got it back. I've tried to, but because I spent too much time in nightclubs, chasing girls, being on TV shows in Japan, I just let it go. Just let it go and became more of a singer, really, than a player. That's how it started for me.
That's interesting. You say that about your piano playing. My favorite singer, Nat King Cole, and the meat of his career, he stopped playing. I'm sure that he still could, but he was a stand-up singer. But I probably, like him, I suspect there was still great satisfaction in being able to communicate with your voice. Something about the voice and communicating with the voice where you sometimes touch, sometimes in a way more directly. Because it's the we have the language, we have the story, and we have the hummable melody, and so I'm sure it's still maybe some regret about losing some of the piano, but you're still communicating in a big way with the voice.
Yeah, and I think what the piano's become for me now is an accompaniment to my voice. And you know what? The truth is that I can accompany myself without even looking at the keyboard because I had all those years where I really perfected the art. Even though I lost it eventually, it was still under there, and I can quite happily sit on stage and really keep eye contact with the audience because my fingers just know where they're going, you know?
Yeah. Now Your parents, did they see the musical gift in you and they supplied you with the instrument, or how did it happen?
Yes. So I got a tiny keyboard for Christmas with notes like this big, tiny little notes, mini keyboard. And within about 3 weeks, I could make this thing talk.
Right.
Having never played anything before. And so we went then to see what was the next thing. So this would have been like now the end of February. So, you know, past Christmas, I wasn't due any Christmas presents. And we went to a music shop and there was a Yamaha organ with two manuals and bass pedals. And my father had quite a lot of time off at work and he sold it all to get the money to buy me this organ. So That was an enormous turning point for me. It meant I could progress. And without that, who knows what the story would be. But, you know, all any of us need at some point is someone to stand beside us or to support what we're doing, to just encourage us and just give us that tool to go forward.
Isn't that amazing? Just thinking about the building blocks of your person and your career. Had he not taken that interest, had he was like, do something different, whatever his thoughts were about your talent at the time, he said, no, I'm going to make a sacrifice and I'm going to, do this for my child. It was the watershed moment. Somebody believing in you, somebody believing in you and that being the catalyst to propel you to greatness. I mean, you are quite prolific. in your writing and your musical ideas? Maybe you have it in your mind how many number one hits you've had. And it's kind of greedy, man. You're kind of greedy a little bit.
You know I have the exact figure in my mind as well, don't you?
Yeah, but man, what a blessing that somebody saw the spark or something in you and cultivated it. That's the thing. I grew up. How many brothers and sisters do you have?
I've got one older brother.
Yeah, I had eight in my family, and so you know, I'm not saying you could get lost in the shuffle.
Yeah.
You know, but my mother heard my little voice when we were all singing as a family, and she was like, there's something there's something there. And, you know, she started to call me something. She was like, she started to call me her songster. She's like, you're my songster. And I didn't even know what she was calling me. It was like, you know, what does that mean? You're my little singing angel. Yep. And she just kept. You know, so words matter, and what it is that people are giving their children, what it is that we do with those foundational blocks are very, very important. We know this, but in terms of our what we end up doing in our lives, it can be really,
absolutely,
really significant.
It was a funny thing as well because my dad was a man of very few words. However, his actions were enormous. And you know, like you say, we learn and take things from, we hopefully take all the good bits from our parents.
Yeah.
And it's always, always stuck in my mind that one move right there has just led to all this.
Yeah.
And also, you know, even just from an attitude perspective, when he did that, this wasn't going to be something I'd just do for a weekend. I knew what it had cost. I knew, I'm not talking about money. It's in effort, in goodwill, in belief, all of those things. There was no way on earth I was going to let him down. I was going to work and work, and I might not have got there, but I was going to try.
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome. So he did his part and you did your part.
I hope so. I hope so.
What did he do?
My father had a couple of jobs. I think it was his one regret that he really didn't see a lot of my brother and me. He used to work at a chemical plant. He was a product manager, and he'd do that from 10 o'clock at night till 6 a.m. He'd come home and go to bed, and then at midday till 8 o'clock at night, he'd go and work on a farm. Which he loved. He loved animals, and he loved to be outside. And I mean, even that. I mean, now to do two jobs consisting of 8 hours, it's just unbelievable to even think.
Yeah.
He was just a hard working man, and I don't ever class what we do as work, but right. I know how much effort and time and commitment I put, and it's come from him.
Yeah. Yes, amazing. I'm touring and you know, some years it's 250 shows a year. And I still say that I'm still not working hard as my mother.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's interesting. Does your family and your upbringing, has that found its way into your creative process, your writing? Do you speak about them? Do you speak about your childhood in your music?
I think, well, you know what it's like writing songs. Even if you don't want things to be in there, they end up being in there somewhere. You know, it's just like you try and hold it back. It has a, you know, real emotions and real feelings. They have a really handy habit of finding its way onto my page.
Yeah.
So they are, of course. It's all in there. And I don't have a lot to complain about. I had a perfect childhood. I really did. to love. My dad sadly passed away about 9 years ago, but my mum's still very, very well, and she's doing great. And when I go anywhere actually by myself, if I'm touring Australia or I go to LA for a couple of months, I actually take her with me.
Wow.
When my dad passed away, the first thing I said to my mum was, I said, right, from this point, if you're invited anywhere, the word you say is yes. You go and enjoy your life.
Yeah.
Don't be held back. Yeah. You know? And she does. She comes. She's great. She loves studios. She loves gigs. She loves hanging out.
Yeah. Wow. That's really awesome. I think about, you know, for myself, when you said even when you're not trying, the things that have happened in your life, the things that move you and what you love and who you love find its way into the music. You can say, you know, okay, let me write this type of song. Let me, you know, the furthest thing away from your life experience. And before you know it, your life experience finds its way into the music. And I quite like that. I think what I'm happiest about now that my mother is gone away, and my father has passed, and even now recently my brother has passed from COVID, I can find them in the music.
Yeah,
I can find them in the music. And when I spent a lot of time since we've been in lockdown, listening for my mother. I hear my mother in my tone, in my poetry. I hear my brother in the words that I say. He was very close in age to me, just a year older than me. So sometimes my life experiences were his. And so when I sing about something, when I sing a song from my new record, it's called A Dadgone Thing, and I speak about the absence my father had in our lives, I'm telling his story as well. And so, yeah, he's there, and I listen to what I've said, the optimism about love. It only comes, my mother had this optimism about life and people mm-hmm. and about love. And she's there, mm-hmm. and I'm so glad that I didn't, you know, shy away from it. And in a case like yours, you write something and it echoes and reverberates hundreds of thousands, millions of times, and they're still alive in a way.
Yeah. Yeah, that connection is with you forever.
Yeah,
there's no question when, especially with family, is that it's intertwined into the way we breathe, and it's just there. It's present at all times. It's a wonderful thing, actually. It's a thing to be. It's the upside, you know, of life, and people move on, and you know the upside is they're always there, and a part of them is still in you, and you keep them alive.
Yeah. Tell me, how old were you when your band started? Take That.
I was 19 when I joined the band.
Yeah.
So I'd done about two to three years. When I was 90, I remember when I joined the group, I was actually wondering how I was going to fit it in, because I was playing shows every night at this point, all in the northwest of England, but every night I'd be in a pub, a club, a bar, a nightclub, sometimes two or three gigs a night. So I was actually considering, how am I going to fit it in? But we had a very persuasive manager with our group the first time around, and he sold it to me, the idea of being a recording artist. It's what I always dreamed of. there's a show here that I used to watch as a kid called Top of the Pops.
Right.
I don't know if you remember.
Yeah, you remember
this show. Well, as a child growing up here, you know, it would be on anyone who was into music dreamed of being on Top of the Pops. And it was my dream to be on that show. And so whatever it took to get there, I'd entertain. And this group, this idea, this manager with this concept, I believed it. I thought, oh, this is it. This is the you know, the thing that the vehicle that's that I can be a part of
to get me to Top of the Pops.
Top of the Pops, exactly. Exactly. And we did, we got there. Took us maybe 18 months, but we got there.
but tell me this, when you got to the places that you dreamed about, did you ever feel like things are moving so fast that I don't have time to savor it? Or when you got there, were you like, ah, this is everything I thought it would be?
I actually think, Gregory, up until only a few years ago, that I haven't really stopped to enjoy anything. It's taken me so long to figure that one out. I don't know why, but I've always felt like I've been on this wheel that's just never stopped turning. Even when I wasn't really that busy, there was a few years where I didn't have a record deal and time just didn't wait for me. It was always something else to do. There was always something more important than where I was right now. I think it took me years to realize it, but it's not healthy, that isn't. It's not a good way to be. Because what it means is you're never actually anywhere. So, you know, this thing you're dreaming of, even when you get to it, you're dreaming of the thing beyond it. It's like you never actually settle anywhere. So I'm afraid I'm a late learner with that one.
It's interesting. They're very honest for you to say that. I think it's you have an extreme case of artistic impatience.
Yeah.
and you're like, you know, you're on the move, which can be good for, you know, for getting things done, and you've gotten a lot done. But you know, you take the good with the bad. I mean, there are things about our personality, some things that we can even call sometimes weaknesses that career wise can be strengths. On different aspects of our life can be strengths. Sensitivity, like a person who has extreme sensitivity, and it may be in one's childhood, in one's early life, it can be seen as a negative thing. But many artists have this emotional sensitivity, and the flip side of that rawness of nerve, rawness of emotion can be the ability to express yourself on stage, on recording, in front of people, in a way that is very emotional, vulnerable, powerful. But in your personal life, it can be this rawness of nerve, this emotion and this vulnerability can be negative things. So this artistic impatience that you talk about is probably, now, you know, now that you look back on your career and you've done so much, you can say, wow, that's a lot of stuff. But you say it's interesting, this honesty that you say is like, I haven't stopped to smell these roses.
Yeah.
How many children do you have now?
I have three children.
Yeah. Do they encourage you to stop and smell these?
Everyone encourages me. yeah. And funny, you know, it's, I heard people talk about it and it took, yeah, it's taken me a while to figure that one out. However, I do believe, that now I've seen what I do and how I act, when you rectify that and you start to enjoy it, it's pure bliss. It really is. It's something, especially at this point of life. There's something nice about not only looking forward, but looking back's a very special thing. And you know what you bring with you from the past, the good bits and the bad bits. But for me, when I stand in that moment now, I can nod to the future and I can nod to the past, but I'm very, my stance is in that moment. There's nowhere else I need to be. And even to the point where I'm writing, I love being in the room with myself when I'm writing, not thinking about the other track that's going to mix today, but just being there and going, oh, listen to that. That's so lovely. You know, how lucky am I to be doing this for a living today? I wish someone would have a handbook on when you first find success, this is going to happen, you know, and you just want to chase. You just want to go off. You want to be the best, be the fastest, be the busiest. It's crazy. And all that happens is you chase your tail for years and years because you really never, that this place that you imagine you're going to get to, it doesn't exist to start with. But even if it did exist, you know, when will we be there? There's probably nowhere even to park when you get there. So it's like this place, it doesn't exist. The place that does exist is there. You can feel it. You can hold it. You can return to it. It's yours. And it took me a long time to realize that. And a lot of it also comes down to, you know, as the provider for the family, I was the one who had to go out and, you know, go, right, we've got children now, I've got responsibilities, I've got to get out there and do something and have that feeling of providing for everyone. And, you know, I think that those pressures, it can just spiral. It can just spiral till all of a sudden you realize that you're working every hour of your time if you're awake. And the worst bit of all is the enjoyment's gone. It's all gone. And it shouldn't be like that. And I think that, you know, the one thing for me is now at the point where I go, and I don't want to sound like a diva at all when I say this. I'm saying it with the point I'm trying to make in mind, is that when I join a project and it becomes a pain in the arse, I'm the first to go, guys, I love you all. I'm saying good night. Good luck with it. I'm leaving it behind, because you know what? Nothing's worth that stress. That, you know, if I'm not going to be in this house with my family, I've got to be somewhere
it's
really
good.
It's
got to good. Be some bad.
Doing something really.
Right.
That's it.
And this,
I don't want to be with some arsehole telling me I'm rubbish and I need to do better. Bleep me out. I shouldn't be swearing on this. My mother doesn't like swearing.
No, it's okay, man.
Did I make
we're going to leave it in.
Then?
I'm sorry, but that's the real you, player. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying, though.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's something that I am learning. Sometimes you just have to say, actually. Yeah.
You know, that's it.
Yeah. How does a song start for you? Does it come? Is it the lyric? Is it the melody? I was talking to Stevie Wonder, and he was saying that he writes to his melodies. Like, the music comes first, and then we're like, oh, now I got to find some words to this.
Yeah, all different ways for me, Gregory. I do write a lot. Nearly every day,
wow.
I write for something. And it does come in waves for me because, you know, I'll be off doing promotion, whatever, and then maybe even a tour next year. So things do take me from the studio, but in general, if I'm here, I'll write every day. And so It's just one long stream of creating things that are going to give birth to a song for me. And it could be something you say today, or it could be something written on the wall here, or it's someone says on the radio, or a song I hear which I love and I think, oh, I'd like to write something like that. That all of those things take me to a piano and make a song begin. And it could be also lyrics. You know, I often sit and write titles down. So actually, all of the above things take me to write a song.
Yeah, pulling from conversations and anywhere, really, yeah.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Do you have a favorite song that you ever written? I have one in my head.
Oh, Back for Good.
We'll say again.
Back for Good.
Yes, that one. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I love that. It's that melody just sticks in your head. It's killing.
You know what? I wanted a song that I at the time I was rehearsing a lot in falsetto, but I didn't have any song in my repertoire that went into falsetto. And so I wrote that specifically to go whatever I said, you know, to go high.
What a beautiful accident.
Yeah, it wasn't it. Yeah, it was a wonderful accident.
Yeah, really cool. I love that. I love that tune. So yeah.
You know, I always relate these songs to times of my life. I almost stop hearing the lyric and the music, and I it always makes me think of a moment. And I do remember when we all came back in 2007 as like a comeback tour. And the question everyone was saying was, yeah, you know, there's those guys from the 90s, but, you know, can they make relevant music again? And it was a big opportunity for us. And one of the first things we did, we went in a studio and we came up with the song Patience. And it was like that song was being written for 10 years, like the message, the angst it was recorded with, it was a song that had not been written, but it had been written over a long... It was a lot of emotion came out.
Yeah.
And that song, we needed that song. You know, it was one of those ones where you go, okay, this is a turn left or a turn right at this point. And thankfully for us, it worked. And so I remember that song with great, you know, lots of good memories and good feelings.
Yeah. Very cool. Very cool. You have a new project that have you already recorded it? Are you in the studio now? Are you?
I actually, you won't believe this. I actually finished recording it 2 weeks before lockdown.
Wow.
Which was, I mean, honestly, it was, we were so unbelievably lucky because most of it is with an orchestra. And I mean, I don't even know if orchestras are recording at the moment with all the socially dis, but it's very difficult to get play. And also the one thing you'll know is that, like, when an orchestra records, it's like, you know, when birds fly as a flock and one of them turns to the right and they all move.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, that's what an orchestra's like.
Right.
So they all, I don't believe there's any, you know, the fact that they're all so close together is because they're all listening to one another.
Yeah.
So the idea of like a socially distanced orchestra would, that would be a different record for me at the moment. We were fortunate enough to get all our recordings done before this horrible thing happened. Yeah. And I've just basically spent the last few months mixing and doing some overdubs. But thank goodness someone was looking down on us. And yeah, we were all finished with our recording.
Yeah, it is something to... I mean, we finished our record before lockdown, but it's so strange to be. It really is. I guess we were lucky to be able to have done something. You were talking about you had a period of time where you didn't have a record deal, and did you think it was potentially the end of your career at that moment?
It was actually quite a difficult personal time for me. The scales of life are quite strange that I was coming to the end of my career, part one, I call it. I didn't know there was going to be a part two. If I had known, I'd have really enjoyed those years, but I actually, it was like torture. Trying to work out how to get back on a stage again. I'd really lost, I couldn't actually imagine being on a stage again is the truth, but I'd lost all my confidence. But at the same time as all that happening, we had our son. So all of a sudden the private life's really high and becoming a dad. That's quite scary for a man, you know, and a woman. So I'm figuring that out. And before I've figured it out, we have our second child. So private life's on fire now and music's just going nowhere. I was really down on the music. I was working with artists, writing a little bit, but I wasn't very good at that point. And it took me a few years to sort of pick myself up and... I think as the kids sort of went off to school and I got my act back together. But, you know, I look back now, Gregory, is one of those times which I've actually built the last 13 years on. It's all built on that 5 years of doing nothing. It's built not wanting to be back there. It's built on who I learned I was at that time. I get so much material from that time and, you know, the craziness of a creative head that isn't creating. It's a really strange thing. So, yeah, it was an interesting time for me.
Yeah. You look great, by the way. You're...
Oh, thank you.
Yeah,
thank
you're the you. Same. We're born in both the same year.
71?
Yeah.
71. Yeah, there you go. You're 50 next year?
I don't know what you're talking about. What? I'm sorry. There's a malfunction.
The line's gone dead.
I can't hear you.
The line's gone dead. What month, Gregory?
November.
No. Oh, you're older than me. Oh, I'm glad I'm not that old. Yeah, it's the big one. The big one. Wow. Yeah. No big parties for us, hey? No big parties.
Yeah,
no.
We've celebrated already too much, but...
I think we have, yeah.
Listen, really an honor to talk to you about the foundation of you. I love just what you've said to me and the gifts and encouragement, subtle gifts and subtle encouragement that your family has provided you. Your mother immersing you in music and your father seeing the spark and making a sacrifice to make sure that you advance in that. That's a gift, man. It's wonderful to hear from somebody who's had a track record of hits and ideas that just keep coming. So this artistic impatience that you have that you think is a problem, so may it be for the rest of your life, so that we keep getting stuff from you.
Thank
really,
you.
Really thank a pleasure you. To talk to you, man. Yeah.
And you, Gregory. Hey, you probably know this, but we love you over here, you know. I think you can tour here forever. I saw you at the Albert Hall, not last year, the year before, I think.
Okay.
And, oh, man, your voice. You actually don't need a microphone. It's so beautiful. And a great band you had with you. It's a wonderful show. I loved it.
Oh, thank you, man. Thank you. Thank you. The funny thing is, you know, when we're talking about things moving so fast that sometimes you don't have a chance to savor it. Whatever night it was, that night was the same way. Because I remember the performances at the Royal Albert Hall, all beautiful, all wonderful, but I had something extraordinary going on the day before, and something extraordinary going on the day after. So I always had these dreams of, like, you know, having 2 weeks to build up to this performance and to savor it after it happened, maybe for two more weeks. When you're moving, it's like, okay, I think that next morning we left at 4 a.m. to get to somewhere else the next day, you know?
What a shame. What a shame. Hey, listen, I can promise you now they'll have you back whenever you want, Gregory.
Yeah.
We love you here, so come back. Come and sing again.
No, thank you so much, man. I really appreciate it. And it's been wonderful time hanging with you.
And good luck. Good luck with the podcast and good luck with the music. And hope to see you here next year on tour.
Yeah, thank you. You too, man. I'm gonna keep some of this stuff for myself. Maybe the listeners will get it, but this was for me. But thank you. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Hey, Gregory, next time you're in the UK, just carve me an hour. I'll take you for a drink. I'd love to meet you.
It's going to be some top shelf. Bring your wallet. Yeah.
Lovely. No problem.
So there it is. Thanks once again to the wonderful Gary Barlow, and thank you for joining us. If you like what you heard, share us with your friends. Everyone's invited. I'm Gregory Porter, and this has been The Hang, a Cup and Nuzzle production.